SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 20 minutes in, and as I mentioned the other day, and knowing that we had to get this difficult story in, the head-on collision that took the lives of two horses and badly injured Roddy McKenzie, exercise rider, and Neil Howard joins us. Neil, sorry that obviously that this transpired at all. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you. Thank you.
What's the latest? I know broken arm, broken leg, surgeries. Yeah. How's he doing?
He's in light of everything, Steve. And thank you for your concern. He's doing pretty well. He's actually having his last surgery as we speak. And hopefully that's going to be almost, he might even be almost done. So I know he'll be happy about that. But he's done well. You know, exercise riders, they're cut from a different cloth. You know, people don't realize they're, I don't know if tough is the word. I don't know how to describe it. But, you know, they do an unbelievable job. And they always put the horses first. And But anyway, to answer your question, I would have to say, in light of the situation, he's doing okay, and I think that everything he's told me that the surgeons and his doctor they've been pretty pleased about the way everything went with the surgeries.
How old is he?
Well, Steve, I'm not even sure how old Roddy is. Maybe late 30s, early 40s. I'm not sure.
How long has he worked for you?
Well, see, he only has been working for me since we got down here after Churchill. I hadn't known Roddy, and he didn't know me. And he rides, you know, he's a steeplechase rider / exercise rider of the highest caliber. I think he plies his trade around the Mid-Atlantic, you know, Maryland, Delaware. And so he only came to work for me this fall, and you talk about a hell of a claim. I mean, it was. It's the day he walked in the barn. You could tell. I mean, everybody liked him. Helpful, true horseman all around, on the ground and on the back of a horse.
Mm. And he's got he's with family. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's down here, you know, by himself. He has his girlfriend, Caitlin, very nice young lady who works for Tom Proctor, and he lives down here, and he's close buddies with Brendan Walsh's crew, and they share a house down here. So he's got a lot of friends and support from them, as well as the people in my barn.
Mm. Well, I reached out because I had not seen a way for people to contribute, and we do, you know, you mentioned his steeplechase riding. We remember him from, I don't think he's ridden on our circuit, you know, in the East Coast circuit, in the afternoons in 3-4 years, but, certainly has had some nice, you know, some nice wins over the years on the steeplechase scene.
A lady up in Delaware, her name escaped. They opened up a page for him, a GoFundMe page for him. But he's been getting a lot of support like that, and I actually I delivered him a gift from the Jockey Colony at Fairgrounds the other day, which was very nice. And how this one thing about the backstretch on racetracks from coast to coast. You know, we might be running against, you know, rivals in the afternoon, but all the other time, everybody's got your back, you know.
How long, a feel for how long he's going to, he'll be out of commission?
I'm not sure. It'll probably be, I don't know, I would just be speculating to say, you know, I'm sure a few months, but he'll have a better idea when he's all done today and they discuss his therapy and everything with him like that. But he is doing good. He's in good spirits. He was actually already out of the hospital for a couple days and came to the races because they had to wait a few days to do the last surgery. They were waiting for some swelling to go down on the lower part of his leg, which was the last surgery. So he's been up and around probably more than you could believe. But he's doing good. He's doing good.
Well, we'll find I haven't been able to, you know, just I poked around earlier this morning and I didn't see it in the, you know, there was the article that Chelsea Hackbarth wrote for Pollock Report, and I hadn't seen, but I'll find a way to, you know, make sure that people can chip in and help.
Yeah.
Roddy, you know, for the duration of time he's going to be sidelined. There is nothing scarier. And Neil, am I wrong, or have you lost another horse? There was another, was it a Churchill? Did you lose a horse to a head-on like this?
No.
Once before? No?
No.
Maybe it was Davy Carroll, I think, maybe, and McPeak might have been that about 6, 7, 8 years ago. I remember. It's the scariest thing.
And
there's no way. It's amazing that, you know, there's just, even with the warning sirens and even if everybody pulls up, it just you don't know what you.
I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
No, tell us what transpired.
You're right. But see, this was one of those horrible, unavoidable accidents that it was a, what I term as a blink of an eye accident. There wasn't, there's no safety protocols or warnings or anything would have had any impact on this type of terrible accident.
You see, you know, when they get loose and they run the wrong way,
it just was one of those. I hate that term. I hate even using it to say it's one of those things. But I mean, these are the kind of things that's always in the back of our minds. But you think about it constantly. You got to do your work, train your horses, and go about your daily day and every day, daily chores every day. But it's, you know, you always worry a little bit, you know, but it's, there's going to be a loose horse, you know, the way we train in this country. A lot of horses on a racetrack, horses going, jogging the wrong way, people galloping, people breezing, everybody's doing a different type thing at the same time. And I think we do remarkably well, in light of the way racing is in the United States. You know, a lot of people using the racetrack at the same time. It's like that everywhere. But, and we, you know, everybody's careful, and for the most part, we do have, I think, you know, great, we've made even greater strides in the safety protocols, you know, the way, you know, and I know I'm most familiar with the ones that, the tracks that I train at, you know, here in Louisville, and you know, here they have a very good program in place, but that wouldn't have anything to do in this. I'm sorry to say in this instance.
Yeah, well, we feel badly for, and I know you didn't want to mention the client and the horse, but
yeah,
and that's not important, but we feel terrible. You talk about the, and we'll get everybody the information on Roddy and how to help. Let me, speaking of the day to day and the job at hand, later today, in fact, about 3:55 Eastern time or Central time, you've got a first-time starter for Samsung. Ontario bred. What about this filly? Her name's Desert Ride.
Yeah. Nice filly, beautiful filly. She's trained okay. Sean's kind of like what she's been doing so far. So, you know, you always take that wait-and-see approach. But I think, I feel fairly good about her making a decent impression first time.
You mentioned Sean Bridgmahan aboard, and This is a Candy Ride out of a distorted humor mare for the wonderful team at Samsung. And tomorrow, too, you've got an older horse tomorrow. You got older maidens going on the grass.
Yeah.
And here's a horse that the weather in New Orleans and at Louisville have kept you from getting. Victory Lane, the four-year-old Tisnau gelding. You're finally going to get a chance for this one on the grass, it looks like.
Yeah, we should be on the grass tomorrow, calling for a little rain Saturday. But I think we're going to get through the weekend okay, but I think we should be okay tomorrow.
What about this horse, this Victory Lane? What? Yeah.
Yeah, he's okay. He's a nice looking. He's a gelding now, and he's decent. I'm still kind of waiting for him to kind of turn the corner a little bit, so to speak. But he's trained okay, and kind of looking forward to getting him on the grass, although, I'd run him if it came off. There'd be no reason not to adjust his blinkers a little bit. I think he gets himself a little bit too far back, but I think he's okay, and I look for him to run okay tomorrow.
And one more, too, since we're on the topic. Going into Saturday, you've got Parade Field, who you had an off-the-turf try. The slop, clearly, he absolutely didn't enjoy the wet track going back to mid-December. But this is a horse that should have some quality to him, no, at some point?
Yeah, I think so. He's been strictly a horse that needs to kind of grow up and mature a little bit, and I think he's doing that. And in his last race, he did encounter a bad trip, and Corey even expressed that to me. So I feel like we had a little something to hang our hat on a so-so effort last time. But he's starting to kind of get it all together now. I do think he's okay. You know, I want to see him do it first, needles to say, because his races have been marginal on paper. But his last race, I think he was going to run well, and then he really lost all chance. So he's another one I'm taking a wait and see approach Saturday.
Well, Parade Field happens to be from a family. This is Mr. Farish, and the damn special guest, a daughter of Gwen Jinsky, who's been super productive. And this has been a nice family overall. And you're plenty familiar with this group.
And he's a beautiful
offspring.
Cult, but like I said, he just was a little immature, but he's starting to kind of get it. He's by Quality Road, so that says quite a bit right there. And so he's doing well.
And you're also another one for Samson on Saturday too. A nice allowance group on the grass. Kitten's Boy, who you've only had for the one start, came down from Woodbine. Malcolm Pierce has him up in Toronto. But what'd you learn about him in that first start? Didn't seem like he kind of backed out of it.
He's a funny horse. He's a nice horse, and I think that he's one of those horses that really, he's hard to get a lot under his belt on the dirt. He's one of those types of grass horses. So I do think he got a lot out of the race. And he's done okay, since that race. So, hopefully he'll step it up and get back on form here in this race. Now he's a horse that he's strictly turf, which I don't have to tell you. So we'll have to watch and see what happens here Saturday with the weather, because they got Saturday's a preview day, so they got all those stakes. So I know they're going to have to be careful about the grass with the other races. So we'll see what happens.
Nice. Kitten's Boy is this one in the fourth, and I just checked the weather actually before we talked. It feels like the rain forecast is diminishing, and especially for the early part of the day, it looks like you'll be okay for that race in the fourth on Saturday. And Neil, otherwise, how's the winter?
Everything's going pretty good. Yeah, got a few newly turned 3-year olds coming along that shouldn't be too far off in the future. And so, all in all, pretty good shape. Pretty good shape.
Well, as always, even under these circumstances, it's always great to be able to talk to you. And coming down for Risen Star Week, so we'll see you in February.
Good.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for asking about Roddy. I really appreciate that.
Not at all. We'll get the information out to everybody as to how they can help Roddy bridge the gap here until he gets back on his feet and back in the irons. In the meantime, Neil Howard, everybody, and watch for Neil later today, and actually the next 3 days. We're always rooting for Neil Howard. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Neil Howard. Let's take a break. Last of the morning. We'll come back, spend the last 20 minutes with Rich Eng. And I saw Rich had a nice piece, his latest ABR piece, and catch up with Rich Eng after this. Rich did give you know, Rich's number one play for the football last weekend, the Eagles and the points, and that came through. We're not playing Sunday, but if you followed Rich, you took the points and you did okay. Back after this, Rich Eng.
The latest thoroughbred racing news. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Where's your head at? Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back about 20 minutes, a little less, to the top of the hour. And again, a fairly light schedule today because of a couple different things. The Monday holiday part of it, NYRA shifting Thursday, no Thursday racing. They're going to be racing Monday. And now, of course, we lost Santa Anita today. So one less option. Charlestown Delta, Fairgrounds, Golden Gate, Gulfstream, Penn National, and Turfway for today's action, and Camarero as well. And, you know, earlier today in Dubai, I forgot to mention this, and just as we were on the air and visiting with Russell Jones and Michael Matz, the first of Kenny McPeak's, I guess, four horses, I think he brought to Maidan, and Honorable Treasure for Harold Lerner. In fact, so two mentions today for Harold Lerner. Honorable Treasure, second in that opener today at Maidan. And did one other little news note I wrote on my master page here. The officials in Louisville yesterday announcing that Muhammad Ali will be honored by having his name attached to the airport. And it'll be Louisville Muhammad Ali International. And the only connection anymore, I guess, to Standiford is the abbreviation for Louisville on your baggage tag. SDF means Standiford. Rich Yang joined us. Rich's name, Rich and I, both of our names, Rich, could be airport abbreviations, ENG and BYK.
Hey, good morning, Steve. That's pretty good. You know, when you mentioned the Muhammad Ali Airport in Louisville, I saw a tweet that a friend of mine, a columnist for the Louisville Courier Journal, Tim Sullivan, put
yeah.
up. And the tweet was something like this. I don't know if I hope I don't butcher it, but I guess Muhammad Ali was literally on a plane. This was in his heydays when he was in his 20s. And the flight attendant said to Muhammad Ali, sir, you'll have to, you know, buckle your seatbelt. We're getting ready to take off. And he says to the flight attendant, Superman don't need no seatbelt. And so the flight attendant says to Muhammad Ali, well, Superman doesn't need an airplane either. So I thought it was a great comeback by the flight attendant. But, you know, that was the way Ali was. If you remember him back in the 60s when he was a brass champion of heavyweight boxing.
I love that. That's a story that has been either, you know, listed as either, you know, a rumor or it may have actually happened. No one's sure, but it makes a good story. That's the best part.
Yeah, stories like that sometimes grow legs. So.
Exactly. Well, and of course that immediately will stay in the area for a minute. The great Marvin Barnes story, right? About flying from where were they flying from? Either Louisville to St. Louis and the time change and the flight. I forget how this worked. The flight was leaving at 2 and arriving at 2, and Marvin Barnes said, "I'm not flying on no time machine. I'm not getting on that plane."
That was when Marvin was with the ADA Spirits of St. Louis.
There you go.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's one of those. Say that's another airplane story. That's a classic. I ain't getting on no time machine.
Very good. You know, I was trying to search for that when you started, and then when you mentioned Marvin Barnes and the Titans, oh yeah, I remember that.
Unbelievable. There's There's a lot of Marvin Barnes stories that could be a segment all by itself. Rich, speaking of segments, I got to get you to talk about your terrific piece from the other day at ABR, and it's really a good read, and I'll send the link out. I was waiting till we talked, but mandatory payouts, selective approach for beginners to playing Pick Six, and you basically give a primer to people that may be encountering the landscape of the big multi race sequences. They might be encountering it for the first time, and talk about how you recommended neophytes approach them.
I'd be happy to. Every once in a while, I write a column that really gets a large response, and I get a lot of emails or social media responses, and this was one of those. But it started with the fact that when I wrote Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies more than a decade ago, I had a lot of people who were new to horse racing. They pick up the book and they would fire off questions at me, and one of the ones that I get asked an awful lot is, am I a Pick Six player? And going back to when I first wrote the book, I could honestly tell people that no, I am not a Pick Six player. However, I will play the Pick Six on mandatory payout days, and when there is a decent amount of money in the carryover, because then it creates what I call a positive efficiency for me. I haven't put money into the pot. All that money sitting there is other people's money, and if I'm lucky enough to put a ticket together and then catch it, it would be a pretty good score. And another reason for not betting, being a big Pick Six player, is budget-wise, when it was a $2 unit, it gets pretty expensive. If you start adding horses, it's literally hundreds, and in many cases, thousands of dollars to play the Pick Six. So I really couldn't get into it, going back a ways. But now with the evolution of the Pick Six and a little bit of the history of it, I touch upon it in my column. One is the growth of the 50-cent Pick Five. A lot of tracks, especially big race tracks, have been coming up with the Pick Five, and they lowered the minimum to 50 cents. A lot of places also lowered the takeout, so it was in the range of the 15% range. That bet was taking more and more popularity and more money away from the $2 Pick Six pools. So, historically, I'm going to credit Beulah Park. I think it was Mike Weiss. It might be someone like, if I get his name correctly, but they came up with a new formula for the Pick Six, where they lowered the minimum, and they also created a jackpot pool where the only way you get the jackpot would be if you were the only single winning ticket that day, which is very hard to do at any size racetrack anywhere in the country. And invariably, the carryover would last until closing day, creating just an absolute feeding frenzy on that closing day. Low minimum Pick Six, big carryover pool, literally would create pools of many millions of dollars. So, that idea has been copied, and then jumping to the future of the present time, we see it at Gulfstream Park, we see it at Santa Anita with a 20-cent Pick Six, and the takeout's a lot higher. It's probably in the range of the 40-45% range, but a good chunk of that goes into the unique winning ticket pool. So it creates that jackpot at the end of the rainbow if somebody's the only winning ticket. So what I wrote about in my this column to further it along, Steve, is the fact that in my mind, as a smaller player and as someone who's likes to recommend things to newcomers, is there's a sweet spot at some point in the wagering when the carryover pool grows so large that the syndicates start chasing after the unique ticket angle, because they can catch it and cash for $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, whatever the amount is. They will increase the size of their play, and to do that, they have to throw more and more long shots into the pool. So, in my mind, Steve, the fact that there's a lot of wasted money, because a lot of the horses that they put on the ticket, quite frankly, have very, very little chance to win. But if they catch lightning, that is what we call a separator, which knocks out most of the other tickets. So they have to put horses like that on a large Pick Six play. So for a guy like me with a 20-cent minimum, I recommend to folks when the carryover gets real big, like it is now at Santa Anita and many times at Gulfstream, is you know, put together a skinny ticket. It you know, somewhere in the range of $20, $30, $40, $50, because you have a chance to cash, maybe catch for many thousands, and it, you know, it fits within a lot of people's budget as far as the amount of play. And it's always fun to go for a score for a smaller player, to have a chance to go for a score. And a score for a smaller player might be 2,000, it might be 4,000, or it might be 6,000. But they're not going for the angle of the only winning ticket. They're going for the angle of more formful results, where they'll share the 6 out of 6 with many. So that's the strategy I wrote about in the column, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. A few negatives, because I think some of the bigger players don't like that idea, but I think a lot of the smaller players are really receptive to that opportunity to make a score with a little bit of money.
And this has been, you know, it's really been an arduous discussion for several years. I mean, ever since Gulfstream introduced it, and I had Maury Wolf, we had Paul Matisse through, and you know, we talked to, you know, as any number of very big players that understand all the dynamics, and it has so many negatives for the majority of the time. There is the point where, as you suggest, it gets to a critical mass where there's so many extraneous combinations being covered that, in fact, there might be the potential for that value. Between the outlandish takeout structure that this bet creates, and more importantly, the money that is held out of circulation, continues to be a real sore point and a mammoth negative. That the money it's taking out and holding on the side, unavailable for churn, is really a negative. And then the biggest frustration has been, and this is at least been moderated slightly in recent distribution days. There was a period, Rich, where particularly Gulfstream was creating the payout days and putting together cards that were preposterous, that were just idiotic, that guaranteed that, you know, 12 by 12 by 11 by 10 by 11 by 12, guaranteeing that nobody that had contributed to the building of the pot was going to be able to put a ticket together that was going to have a chance, you know, should any, you know, more unusual horses win during the sequence. And it did seem repeatedly that preposterous horses were winning, and that was, to me, really adding insult to injury. I mean, it wasn't enough that this money's being held out, and that, you know, this inflated takeout structure was pretty usurious, and also the way the thing is advertised, to people that don't necessarily know, oh, you've got a chance to, you know, 20 cents, you can win. Bullshit. They're 20 cents, you're not winning anything. I mean, stop. It's a terrible come on. So I have vacillated back and forth on the value of this thing and the way it is spread. I don't know. To me, you play it when it's being distributed and no other time.
Yeah, you know, I understand everything you say, and everything is true. I mean, the takeout, when you think about it, the normal takeout in a pick six is usually in the range of 25%, but when you're taking out maybe another 20% and throwing it into that unique jackpot, you know, that's where people are, you know, can do the math. You add the two takeouts, and we're talking 45% in that ballpark, which is unbelievable. That's getting into the lottery type of takeout, which is somewhere around 50% or something like that. But, you know, from my angle, what happens is when the carryover gets so large, for example, it's somewhere in the $800,000 range, there is so much new, fresh money coming in on a daily basis that takeout actually doesn't, you know, bother me because the size of some of these tickets includes so many long shots who cannot win. or have right. just an infinite chance to win, that is almost like wasted money. And if the form holds up, where, you know, form meaning, you know, you get a couple of favorites and a couple of $10 horses and a couple of 12, you know, just in that mid-price range, horses that, you know, the handicappers, a lot of handicappers can find and reach, then those guys who put in the big tickets, well, you know, they might cash, but they might actually lose money for the day as far yeah. as, you know, hitting the pick six and the size of ticket they put in. So the takeout at the level that I'm playing at, it really doesn't matter to me that it's 45% because there's so much money there on the table right now and fresh money coming in.
And that is exactly the argument that our friend, our late friend, Chet Hancock, I mean, Chet had that, and he had a pool of about five guys that would each put in, you know, whatever, $50 to $100 a day, and they were quite content to hit for $8,000, $6,000, $11,000. You know, if they got a high four or low five return, you know, what, some days the thing, you know, if there's two winners, the thing pays a big return and for a modest investment. And Chet, you know, Chet went to town on it. So I understand that part. It's a fascinating discussion. And I don't like the concept that people might get drawn in with a certain expectation, not knowing, you know, the difficulty factor of it.
Yeah.
I think it's been advertised kind of falsely. That's the one, you know. I wanted to touch on it.
Yeah, that's why I wrote, you have to find that sweet spot that makes it right for you to get into the pool, and that's when the carryover is big and you have a chance to make that kind of score with a small ticket.
Well, February 2nd, it looks like, is going to be the distribution day. That's what Santa Anita's asked the racing board, if they can do a force out on Saturday, February 2nd, which happens to be the day I'm doing Beat the Host. Rich, we can't beat a visit from Rich Eng, of course. Rich Eng for a Pro Pick. Rich, who are your championship game? Good job with the Eagles and the points last week. Who are your plays Sunday?
Yeah, that was a nice winner last week with the Eagles. I've already taken the Rams plus 3.5, and I've taken New England on the money line. So those are my two plays. I've already bet them earlier this week.
There we go. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter. RaceDayLasVegas.com for Rich's Santa Anita analysis and simulcast plays of the day. No action canceled at Santa Anita today, so we'll save it for next week. Rich, thanks as always.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck, everybody.
Rich Eng, folks, and America's Best Racing, too, is the piece that Rich. Want to thank Neil Howard and Rich and Andy Serling and Tony Black and, of course, Michael Matz and Russell Jones. Good luck today. Talk to you weekend preview tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.